Welcome to What's Ailing the World, the ultimate in reality radio with information that can save your life. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect the criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all these problems already available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of child protection. The ability to see the big picture is the critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these predators down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units to believe their lie, it becomes a truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of the Hippocratic oath taken to first do no harm, and now actually creates disease and murders people with medicine. Thanks to the persecution I encountered due to my work, including the abduction and ongoing state-sanctioned torture of my only child, I was forced to face the truth that all the problems we are facing are being caused intentionally, and that the solutions that have been developed by people of conscience who step out of the boxes created when one becomes a quote-unquote licensed professional in any field are being suppressed. Of course, the good news is that once we realize that all of this is being done intentionally, then the psychopaths who are causing us to suffer on a global scale obviously need to be quarantined and stopped from creating this living hell. And then we can actually have a world that is as it's supposed to be, with health and justice and, actual nature that is not being destroyed. Of course, the most important thing we need to do is make a plan to save ourselves and then take action. Just knowing the truth does not set you free. You have to act on the truth. Negotiation and compromise with evil is impossible. And, there's many of us standing up. I have people that are standing up on the show on a regular basis. I encourage all of you to face the fact that just because you're an ostrich and you stick your head in the sand, or you hide under the bed and cower in fear, or you do the bidding of the psychopaths to put food on your table and therefore are selling your souls for cash, does not mean you are not going to be affected by what they're doing. Because evil is evil, even to its own. So it's time for people of conscience to grow a backbone, take responsibility for righting the wrongs that are being done right in front of our faces, and start to stand up as a gigantic group and say, we are not going to tolerate your genocidal agenda anymore. If you think my work is important, please tell others about the show. You can support this work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them from me. To learn how I do consults, click on the Services tab on my Reversing Vaccine-Induced Diseases.com site. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. I have a toll-free number, which you can contact me from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean. That number is 888-321-6751. If you get a strange message that the number's been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you. My Skype username is drcarly1, but I use Skype primarily for international clients and radio shows. And yes, I have clients all over the world. I do not have to see people in person. I do consults by taking a very detailed history and develop an individual protocol of what I would do if I was you to reverse your disease with natural therapies. Of course, I do not practice medicine nor give medical advice, because to actually heal people is not allowed under our present medical system. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. The archives for these changing times, you will see icon to click on at the top of the page. There's another one on the other side of the page for my shows on republicbroadcasting.org. And my shows on Orion are right on that actual page that you get to when you just click on Dr. Carly Archives, along with many other shows I've done on other stations. I've done thousands over the years, but when I do one that I think brings out new information, I have Sheldon Day archive that for me, and I'm very grateful to him for hosting my archives, because my websites just don't have enough bandwidth. If you have questions or comments during the show, you can call in at 785-336-5190 or Skype the producer of the show at Patty Walk in Turtle TCT Radio. You can also just write your questions in the chat room, and that's been working out very well. So if you want to do that, and the board op will transmit via the Skype instant message the question or comment to me, and we will comment on it as we are able to do so. One of the most important things you can do to protect yourself and your loved ones from the organisms being created by the mad scientists at the over 1,300 biowarfare labs in the U.S. alone is purchase a Silver Lungs Colloidal Silver Generator. Go to the link section of reversingvaccineinducediseases.com to learn about the silver generator that I use personally for myself and all my tests. And, of course, the new one they're trying to scare us with is West Nile virus. Of course, that's coming out of laboratories as well. Well, in fact, it never existed before 1999. So I suspect that that's another one that escaped from Plum Island off the coast of Long Island, just like Lyme disease did. Because this is what we're paying our taxes for, people, is for these mad scientists to create disease and unleash it on the population. And, of course, all we need to do is read Agenda 21 of the UN, and it talks to us about how they want to depopulate the planet by 90%. And, of course, I agree the planet should be depopulated, but the ones that should be depopulated are the psychopaths who are trying to kill the rest of us off. And let me just state that the views expressed on this broadcast do not represent the views and opinions of the station, but rather are the comments of the host, guests, and callers. Now, on today's show, the answer to our question, What's Ailing the World, is the title of a very important book, Trapped in the Lawyer's Den with Bloodsuckers, a nonfiction book by Thelma N. McCoy. And this is an 86-year-old woman. I was so amazed and just inspired by her after going through years in the court and learning, you know, that basically, you know, the courts are full of bloodsuckers. I totally concur with her. And she not only stood up and did everything she could do, she documented it and then wrote a book exposing them all. Thelma Newton McCoy graduated from North Carolina Central University in May 1948 with a Bachelor of Arts degree in history. She continued her graduate studies at A&T State University, Greensboro, North Carolina, North Carolina Central University, Durham, North Carolina, and Michigan State University, East Lansing, Michigan. In 1961, she earned her Bachelor of Science degree in elementary education from Fayetteville Science State University in Fayetteville, North Carolina. In addition to her employment as a history teacher, Mrs. McCoy worked for the United States government for 3 years at Pope Air Force Base. where she worked in base supply and base procurement ordering supply. Her love for equal justice and democracy motivated her to write this book. It is her desire that this book will serve as a source of enlightenment to the American people who are soaked and abused by the legal community so unmercifully. Too many people feel that they are in a stage of powerlessness to do anything about the corruption in the legal profession because of the unique power that lawyers have in our society. But as long as non-lawyers employ lawyers and non-lawyers are in the majority, there is hope. Because power can come from people like us united to reform the legal system to make it better serve the true interests of the American people. Consumer advocates for legal reforms can reform the legal system if they are united to do so. But as long as lawyers can soak the American folk and police themselves, the legal profession will continue to be corrupt with no end in sight. And as I have danced with the system 7 years in seven courts, as high as the United States Supreme Court, and seen nothing but absolute corruption and fraud, I totally concur. So welcome to the show, Thelma, and I just want you to open it up, if you could. Just give the listeners any information you would like to, including what you continue to do here in North Carolina to try to educate people as to what's going on.
Thank you, Dr. Colley. I am Thelma Newton McCoy. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I am very concerned about the corruption in the legal system and the lack of access to justice to do something about it. We have three branches of government, but the three branches of government seem to be controlled by one professional group, the legal profession. The legal profession seems to have a monopoly over all legal services. That gives the legal profession absolute power over our legal system, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Every man, a professional group with power, will abuse it. To prevent this abuse, power must be a check to power, the art of making government work. By lawyers controlling in the unique way that they do, the legislative, executive, and judicial power, we have no appropriate, in my opinion, check on the legal profession. I have experienced firsthand the corruption in the legal profession, and it cost me my job as a teacher because I could not find a lawyer who would give me true and meaningful legal representation, because to have done so would have exposed the corruption in the legal system. I realize that the pen is mightier than the sword. So after I was not able to find legal representation, I started a writing campaign in which I attempted to expose this corruption. When I did that, I ran into problems with the legal system. One reason I think that I ran into problems at the time that I did was because it was by now 1980. We had an amendment on the ballot in North Carolina, where we were supposed to vote for or against an amendment that would give lawyers only the right to be judges and justices. Following that, there was another amendment on the agenda, which was in 1984. there was an amendment that no one could be a district attorney or an attorney general unless he was a lawyer. Following that, Mr. Rufus Edmiston, who was the North Carolina Attorney General, was working on an amendment which would give lawyers only the right to do wiretapping. He was working on a wiretapping deal. And by working on this wiretapping deal, he appeared on a station here, Channel 3 radio station. And I called in and I really wanted to know who would check on the lawyers.
Right.
He said that the bill would be carefully scrutinized because the judges and the district attorney and the state attorney general would supervise the lawyers.
Right. Who are all lawyers. And so if you have a rogue lawyer committing massive crimes, which of course we do, who's going to check on them? I want to go through some of the high points in your book, and I don't have time to read books, but I read your book cover to cover. I just have to say, your story is so amazing, especially for the fact, if I may mention it, you are an African-American woman, just even going to college back in 1948 as a woman, much less an African-American woman, just goes to show how outstanding you are in every way. But what these lawyers did to you, and I've been there. I've walked the road with you. And so as I was reading your book, I mean, I became physically ill. Because once you've gone through something like this, you know, as I always say, there is no pill for injustice. And I want to go through details of what are in your books so that the listeners can get a feel for it. And, of course, the idea of lawyers investigating themselves, as I said, is ridiculous. And also, I just want to mention one other thing, because I've had many Twilight Zone moments in my life. That's what I call, you know, when things are happening that just can't possibly be happening. And one of the moments I had was when I suffered the abduction of my only child. I've not seen him for a decade. He's being ritually abused under state sanctioning to try to destroy me for telling the truth about vaccines and other things. And, you know, the Congress has, on both sides, you know, the House and the Senate, they have their judicial boards and, you know, their commissions, and they pretend that they're keeping an eye on what's going on in the courts. And I had actually written a letter. I believe Orrin Hatch was sitting in the seat as the chairman of that judicial commission at that point, basically sending just a few pages of the mountain of evidence I have of the corruption in fraud in my case. And I got back from him where he said, "We don't investigate individual cases." Well, isn't that convenient? Because if you don't investigate individual cases, how can you ever see and document the mountain of corruption and fraud? So that was how I realized that this is how they operate. Basically, if you don't look at the details, you're not going to see the big picture. But before I get to more in your book, I just want to read something which I think you will appreciate, as will the listeners. And this is something I found many years ago. It's called How to Swim with Land Sharks. Well, How to Swim with Sharks, a Primer, written by Voltaire Cousteau. We all know about Mr. Cousteau, and, you know, he's supposed to be one of these people very interested in keeping the oceans safe for the creatures there, but he's actually a genocidist as well. But anyway, so he wrote this, How to Swim with Sharks, and I changed it to How to Swim with Land Sharks, because that's what I call attorneys. And it's very telling, because when you read this, you realize this actually will help anybody who's entering into the courts. And this is what he wrote. Nobody wants to swim with sharks. It's not an acknowledged sport, and it is neither enjoyable nor exhilarating. These instructions are written primarily for the benefit of those who, by virtue of their occupation, find they must swim and find that the water is infested with sharks. Swimming with sharks is like any other skill. It cannot be learned from books. The novice must practice in order to develop the skill. The following rules simply set forth the fundamental principles which, if followed, will make it possible to survive while becoming expert through practice. Rule number one, assume unidentified fish are sharks. Not all sharks look like sharks, and some fish which are not sharks sometimes act like sharks. Unless you have witnessed docile behavior in the presence of shed blood, on more than one occasion, it is best to assume an unknown species is a shark. Rule number two, do not bleed. It is a cardinal principle that if you are injured either by accident or by intent, you must not bleed. Experience shows that bleeding prompts an even more aggressive attack. And of course, you know, we see this in the court system. As soon as you become emotional or outraged or whatever the case may be because of what you're going through, you know, then they concentrate on your quote-unquote behavioral issues when in fact who's not going to have a problem when you're undergoing the ultimate total corruption and fraud that is happening in the court system. He writes that the control of bleeding has a positive protective element for the swimmer. The shark will be confused as to whether or not his attack has injured you, and confusion is to the swimmer's advantage. On the other hand, the shark may know he has injured you and be puzzled as to why you do not bleed. This also has a profound effect on sharks. They begin questioning their own potency, or alternatively believe the swimmer to have supernatural powers. Rule number three, counter all aggression promptly. Sharks rarely attack a swimmer without warning. Usually there is some tentative exploratory aggressive action. It is important that the swimmer recognize that this behavior is a prelude to an attack and take prompt and vigorous remedial action. The appropriate counter move is a sharp blow to the nose. Of course, unfortunately, dealing with land sharks, we don't have such abilities to go that way. Almost invariably, this will prevent a full-scale attack, for it makes it clear that you understand the shark's intentions and are prepared to use whatever force is necessary to repel his aggressive action. Okay, rule number four, get out if someone is bleeding. If a swimmer or shark has been injured and is bleeding, get out of the water promptly because the presence of blood and the thrashing of water will elicit aggressive behavior even in the most docile of sharks. Rule number five, use anticipatory retaliation. A constant danger to the skilled swimmer is that the sharks will forget that he is skilled and may attack in error. Some sharks have notoriously poor memories in this regard. Rule number six, disorganized and organized attack. Usually sharks are sufficiently self-centered that they do not act in concert against a swimmer, but however, upon occasion the sharks may launch a coordinated attack upon a swimmer or even upon one of their number. And of course, this is exactly what happened to you, Thelma, what happened to me. Because as you said, the most powerful weapon is the pen. And as we both have done, you know, the same thing in terms of documenting the corruption and fraud, sending out, you know, letters to those who are supposed to protect us and different things of that action, the attack becomes organized. And, the different things that you went to, which I want to get into now, are just, you know, Exhibit A in terms of how it actually works. So if you could start out by telling the listeners, how did you enter the lawyer's den and start dealing with the bloodsuckers? What was it that happened? You're happily teaching in North Carolina, doing your job, everything's fine, and then how did you get involved with the bloodsuckers?
Thank you. I was involved in an accident. And since I was involved in an accident that caused me to not be able to function properly, not to even be able to move my head or turn it in any direction, I wanted everything to be handled properly and timely. So I retained a personal injury accident lawyer. And when I retained the personal injury accident lawyer, I did not know about the personal injury lawyer's rip-off scams until I became a victim. And when I became a victim and realized something was not right, I tried to release myself from him and ran into all kinds of problems, including problems of him refusing to release me. And what he did that caused me headaches and major problems was he entered into a collusion with a crooked, dishonest medical doctor, a Dr. Edwin Sims Myers, Jr., M.D. And Dr. Myers, the doctor, was on probation for 5 federal felony charges at that time, but I didn't know it. And as a result of being on probation, he was not supposed to violate any laws of the state or federal government. But he fixed out 2 reports. One to fool me that, and mislead me, that I had been recommended for disability retirement based on his x-ray findings and medical findings, and an entirely different report for the attorney, Thomas T. Downer, to try to get $200,000 from State Farm Insurance Company secret to me. So as a result of the doctor leading me to believe that he had submitted the information to qualify me for disability retirement to the NC Medical Board, and he had not done that, and he had encouraged me to resign and had talked to the people in the medical profession and so forth, pretending that he had done that even in my presence when all that was not true. That caused me to come off the payroll and not be on any other form of income. Very, very ill. And when I attempted to expose what had been done to me and why I didn't have any income to live on, they declared a war on my character, pretending all of this was in my mind, that they were too intelligent to do anything like that, and so forth, and refused to cooperate in helping me any. So since they refused to cooperate in helping me any, I went to the Board of Education and talked with the key people in there. And one key person at the Board of Education was Ms. Jo Graham Foster, who was a member of the North Carolina House of Representatives. And we knew each other. In other words, we were co-workers at West Mecklenburg Senior High School. Ms. Jo Graham Foster, at the time that I worked there, she was an assistant principal and also a member of the House of Representatives. So she went through my paperwork with me and was shocked at her findings. And she took action to try to help me to get on the right path. And if she had not done so, I never would have received any benefits to live on after that because of what they were doing to discredit me and so forth, to keep me from having any income to live on, to even write a letter, to be advised to have to write a letter or anything of that nature. So that
okay, was, if I could, I just want to review for the listeners because you're going quickly through the story. I just want to underline some amazing things that you have just discussed. First of all, the doctor who you were sent to by the attorney, this is obviously a collusion situation.
Yes.
This attorney has total control of this doctor, knowing that he's basically, you know, been convicted of 5 felonies. So if he does anything that the lawyer doesn't want him to do, he will find a way to you know, cook that doctor's goose.
Yes.
And basically, as long as the doctor does what the attorney wants him to do, then the doctor's, that's going to be a great way for him to make money. So first of all, he convinces you to actually resign from your position, making you believe that he's going to be able to get disability benefits for you. And then on top of that, when it turns out he never did that, then they try to say that it's all in your mind. Now, obviously, if he found injuries so bad that you needed to go on disability, it's not in your mind. So the whole thing is ridiculous from the get-go. So what was this principal and representative able to do for you? I mean, first of all, they should have gone after this doctor and lawyer combo, because this is obvious fraud. It's the typical, you know, ambulance chasing lawyer. This is how they operate. They get doctors on their payroll that will do anything they're told, and as long as they do what they're told, you know, that's how they make a living. It's just pure evil. So get back to your story in regards to how this representative helped you, because I frankly don't think the representative went far enough.
Okay. The representative that helped me was Ms. Jo Graham Foster, a member of the North Carolina House of Representatives. She is deceased now, but she contacted other key people in the government about it. And when she contacted other key people about it, as a result of what she did, I released myself from Dr. Edwin Sims Miles, Jr., M.D., who was on probation for 5 federal felony charges. Mm-hmm. And I went to other doctors. One key doctor was Dr. Robert Miller, orthopedic doctor. And I went to another one, Dr. Sykes, and a Dr. Ransom. I got 3 medical orthopedic doctors to write up the true report about my condition. And when they did, then following up with that, I was finally able to get retirement to live on.
Okay.
He also helped me by recommending some key people for me to contact that could try to help me. And when the doctor and lawyer found out I was trying to get help and what I was doing was exposing what they had done wrong, they went all out to do everything they could to silence me. And the lawyer involved in my case, Thomas T. Downer, was the best friend of the chairman of the Mecklenburg County Board of Commissioners.
Uh-oh.
Edwin Sims Miles, Jr., I'm sorry, he was the chairman of the county commissioners, was Ed Teacock, Jr. He was the chairman. He was an insurance man. And the district attorney was Peter Gilkes III, the district attorney. And Tom Ray, Commissioner Tom Ray, was a close friend. He was a county commissioner and a Sunday school class teacher. And in the Sunday school class, was the district attorney, two county commissioners, and the lawyer who had done me wrong. So it is what happened, that the chairman of the Mecklenburg County Board of Commissioners at that time was Ed Peacock, Jr. And Ed Peacock, Jr. and Thomas T. Downer were best friends. So in submitting my complaint about the attorney, I sent the county government a copy of my complaint and asked for their help. So when Mr. Edwin B. Peacock, Jr. got the complaint and my request for help, and I named the attorney involved, and the attorney was his best friend, Thomas T. Downer, he contacted Thomas T. Downer and told Thomas T. Downer. And from that point on, Thomas T. Downer was the mastermind of what to say and do to silence me. And what seemingly he had the chairman of the Mecklenburg County Board of Commissioners to do to silence me was he got him to contact the chief of the police department and the attorneys on the board, and he wrote a memo that Tom Ray, who was Thomas T. Downs Sunday school teacher, after he had contacted Peacock, who was his best friend and the chairman of the Board of County Commissioners, Peacock wrote a memo saying that I had threatened to kill him 3 times. 3 times! And that he had contacted the mental health department and the police department about it. Well, that was a lie. If I had threatened him 1 time, I would have been locked up. So when I filed a suit against him about telling that lie on me, he got the lawyers from California that I had retained to conceal and suppress all the evidence that they had, that he had, that proved crimes that they committed that topped the crimes of the Watergate lawyers.
Right. And conspiracy amongst themselves. Because yes. as you mentioned in your book on page 76, as you came to learn that this attorney Downers contacts Peter Gilchrist III, the district attorney, Edwin B. Peacock Jr., and Thomas Ray, all were Downer's fellow church members at Myers Park Presbyterian Church and close
in the same
personal
Sunday school class.
Right. And close
Tom
personal
Ray was a teacher.
Right. Close personal inner circle of friends. Translation, they were all Masons. High level Masons. They all were in this church together. And as soon as a complaint is submitted to somebody who is personally or professionally connected with the criminal that's being complained about, common sense as well as law tells you that they should recuse themselves and state,
right,
I cannot be involved in this because I have connections with this person. But as you said, and as I want to highlight, instead, they actually tried to charge you with a crime of threatening to kill this person, which is ludicrous, to begin with, as well as attacking your mental capacity. Go ahead.
Yeah, Tom Ray went so far. His wife worked at West Charlotte High School, and one of my best friends was also employed at West Charlotte High School. And she heard her telling her assistant that I had called their house threatening to shoot everybody's heads off. All
amazing.
Those kind of damaging lies like that.
Amazing. Here you, a petite, elderly, you know, woman of conscience, just trying to, you know, get what you needed to get to survive. You know, this is the definition of evil. These people are psychopaths. They have no conscience. And what I will say is that although you had to go through this terrible experience, and as you actually agree with in your book, just imagine the hundreds and thousands of people just like you who don't have somebody like this person that was principal of the school to help them. Just imagine what happens to those people.
Yes, if it had not been for me, Joe Graham Foster, I never would have gotten any retirement or anything. They probably would have put me in a mental institution because that's what they were trying to do.
Okay, so I just want to go through some important things that I marked in your book because, you know, let me see, how many pages? It's 230 pages. Oh, and I just want to mention how you can get Thelma's amazing book. She She's involved with Carolina Advocates for Legal Reform. You can email her at calreform@aol.com. Is that still the working email, Thelma?
Yes.
Okay. So people could write you and find out how they can get your book, correct?
Okay. I would like for them to contact me at the address I have in the front of the book.
Okay. Let me find that. Okay. 2825 Bancroft Street.
Yes.
B as in boy, A-N, Croft, C-R-O-F-T, 2825 Bancroft Street, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28206. Do you want me to give out your phone number as well?
Yes,
or,
please do.
Okay. Your phone number is 704-372-9575. And please support her, get a copy of her book, and, you know, start waking people up. Because what I always tell people is, once you enter the court system, if you are lucky enough to just survive the experience, you know, that's something. But there are so many people who do not survive, who commit suicide, who go postal. You know, whenever I hear of any of these situations, where somebody goes into a Wendy's and starts, you know, shooting people, the first question I always ask is, did they just get out of family court? You know, what made them snap? There's a reason people are snapping, and there's more than one reason. There's all kinds of mind control stuff going on as well. But this is very important. So to even get involved in the court system to begin with, you have to realize how dangerous this is going to be, because if you don't commit suicide, if you don't go postal, if you barely survive financially, because what these bloodsuckers do is they figure out how much money you have access to. And they will delay things. They will prolong the proceedings. They will use up every dime you have.
Yes.
And then maybe you will get a settlement. And then once you get that settlement, of course, they'll take between one-third and one-half of the settlement. So this is how they operate. But I just want to mention, as I went through the book before the show, some of the amazing things that you wrote in here. Okay, page 41. When you contacted this A. Root Edmondson, assistant director of the North Carolina State Bar, he informed you that Attorney Downer was not required by the State Bar to give you a copy of the contract with him.
Right.
Okay, how does that work, Thelma? How can you sign a contract with an attorney and then be told you don't have a right to have a copy of that contract? How did that go? Please tell the listeners.
I went in person to the North Carolina State Bar in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I talked with A. Root Edmondson, who was the chief counsel there. And he told me in the conversation that Thomas T. Downer was not required to answer, to give me a copy of the contract. He was not required to give me a copy of the contract. And when I tried to get a copy of the red book that Harold D. Coley, one of the attorneys, had at the bar, he would not give me a copy of the red book. He just pointed to confidentiality and said that he was not required to discuss anything with me, because if he did, that would be the unauthorized practice of law.
Oh. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, I don't know how he could even tell you that with a straight face. It is so ridiculous. And this is one of the things I want people to realize. Once you get involved with one of these blood-sucking land sharks, okay, you have to realize that you are at risk of total corruption and fraud. You can't believe anything that's in the contract in the first place, because, of course, you know, lawyers are the ones that develop contracts, okay? What do lawyers do? They create loopholes. That is their job. And that's why when we hear in Congress, oh, we've got the donut hole for Medicare and all these other things, and they're going to close the donut hole. Where did the donut hole come from? it was created by land sharks, okay? And they do these things intentionally so that harm can be done to the people, so that they can make money, and then eventually they'll come up with some other way to close the loophole. But there will be another loophole within the loophole. That's what they do. And so the idea, I just want people to realize this, is that even if you have a copy of the contract, you almost need to hire another attorney to read the contract because you know there's a loophole in there somewhere. But this is the first time I had ever heard that a client doesn't have a right to get a copy of the contract to begin with. That is mind-boggling.
And they told me also it was no good because it was not signed by the attorney.
Well, why didn't the attorney sign it?
Well, I understand now the same thing is going on because I talked to a lady the other day. She had the same attorney. In fact, two ladies. And they say that they can't get a copy of the contract and they don't have anything in writing or anything to show proof that they've hired the attorneys.
Right. Okay, so two things I would suggest to the listeners, and of course I'm not giving legal advice. First of all, is anytime you're dealing with an attorney, and if I was you, I wouldn't even deal with an attorney. When I was fighting in seven courts for 7 years, I didn't have any money to hire an attorney, which was lucky for me because I would have lost it all anyways. But if you feel you must, and just by the way, so people know, once you hire an attorney, then by definition, you are deemed incompetent. That's actually in Black's Law Dictionary. Okay, so you're deemed incompetent by having an attorney. So if you feel you must go that route, first of all, you must have somebody with you as a witness at all times. In fact, what I would do if I was you is have a tape recorder in your pocket and record everything that's said. Now, in some states, you can legally tape record another party without their knowledge or consent. New York is one of those states. Some states don't allow you to do that. So I'm not even saying that you will be allowed to enter that into evidence. As a matter of fact, they may come after you for taping. But just so you can make notes after the fact, to document everything that happened, and especially, like I said, to have a witness with you who will also remember these facts. Okay, that's first of all. Second of all, if one of these land sharks presents you with a contract, make sure they sign it first, obviously. And then after they sign it, then you sign it, and then the first thing you say is, okay, I want a copy of that contract. The meeting does not proceed until you get a copy of that contract in your hot little hands, and no check is written to the attorney until you have a copy of the contract. So that's one of the few suggestions I would give. And, of course, also realizing that you cannot trust these people. You have to watch them like hawks. If they send you any bills, you have to ask for itemization of everything. And so I just want to mention that because what must be so sad for you, Thelma, is that after everything you've been through and now you're still contacted by people who are going through the same thing, by this downer, bloodsucker. Yeah. He's still doing the same thing to other people.
Right.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I have learned a lot as a result of having this bad experience. And I would like to share a few things with you that I have learned as a result of it. And
please do.
I would like to repeat that what you just said was very good advice, like be sure you have someone with you. I didn't have anybody with me until I ran into these problems. And at that point, I started carrying somebody with me. Because you really need a witness as to what they do. And at the time, I ran into this problem, and I discussed it with other people. They couldn't believe that this was happening, and you couldn't get any help. You didn't have access to justice to deal with attorneys at law. The lawyers are very, very protective of each other.
Yep.
And if you have a case involving the criminal wrongdoing of a lawyer, and you need another lawyer to try to expose the criminal wrongdoings of that lawyer. It's difficult to find one.
Yeah.
I was not able to find one to help me. So people suggested to me nationwide that Thelma contact your elected officials and about it. So I did. I contacted my elected officials, and it was just a waste of time.
Right.
So it made me feel very hurt for people to think that I did not have the intelligence to contact my elected officials in the predicament that I was in without income. So I made a list of my elected officials that I had contacted and did not get any help from. And I started to list out something like this. I said, I explained what has happened to me and why I didn't have any income and so forth. And I said, I have contacted my elected officials for help, and they say they can't help me or they did not help me. And the people that, some of the people that I have contacted are as follows. And at this time, these were the people. I said, I have contacted lawyer James D. Hunt, the governor. Lawyer Eddie Knox, and my name, some of the lawyers locally I had contacted. Lawyer Rufus Edmiston, the state attorney general. I named the two lawyers who were over crime control and public safety. I named the district attorney, lawyer Peter Gilfer III. And when I finished naming the lawyers who were at the head of the different agencies of government that I had contacted for help, I had two pages. I said, and this list could go on and on and on with lawyers, lawyers, lawyers. So I understand after I had named them to show that all three branches of government, the three branches of government was controlled by lawyers, and we really had no check and balance system, according to County Commissioner Tom Ray, he said he was sent the list of people that I had contacted. They contacted him. And he asked the chief of the police department to do an investigation on me to try to find some negative things they could charge me with.
Right.
And so the chief of the police department at that time was Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Abercrombie, and an investigation was done. I noticed a lot of strange things that I could put my hands on after that, but I didn't know at that time I was under surveillance. But they put me under surveillance, and I was followed everywhere. And when they couldn't find anything on me to charge me with, because no crime had been committed, no crime was in the process of being committed, and no crime was about to be committed, they couldn't find anything to charge me for. So we were having a celebration of known as the Statue of Martin Luther King Jr. ceremony down in Marshall Park here in Charlotte. And when I went to the statue ceremony, I was seized by the police. The city police, really, because he was in plain clothing and everything. Nobody would have ever guessed him to be a policeman. And he told me I couldn't park where the other people were parked. They carried me way up there by a church, way a long ways from the crowd where no one could see what they were doing to me. And so when we got up there, my sister and I got out of the car, then this young man came to call me by my name to come to him. But I thought it was one of my former students glad to see me, and I was so happy somebody was glad to see me. I went over to him. And when I went over there, I found out he was a secret policeman. And he told me that I did not like the way an attorney had handled a legal matter for me, and that I was under surveillance and I'd have to be searched. And I was searched without a search warrant or anything. And he took the secret that he told me that Mr. Ed Peacock, Jr., the county commissioner, had ordered the surveillance. Well, Ed Peacock, Jr. and Tom Donald were best friends.
Wow.
And for what was done, they had planned to plant a pistol on me. And I believe until this day, and my family and everybody, if my sister, who was a nurse, had not been with me, they would have had a chance to plant that pistol in my bosom. And I would have been searched, and they would have found the pistol and carried me to jail.
Wow. And I just want to point out that the taxpayers are paying for these quote-unquote services. I mean,
yes,
it's just...
all this.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And, also I just want to state that you mentioned... on page 44 of your book, as you're starting to go through this, you had the conditions, you know, obviously severe whiplash and I don't know what other things that you actually had as a result of the car accident. But after all the stress that they put you through, you started having fainting spells and having all kinds of other medical issues because of what they were doing to you. This is an assault. They were
exactly what happened to me caused me to start having fainting spells.
Yes. Exactly. So they are hurting you. These are terroristic measures that they're bringing forth on you because of the fact that you're trying to expose the corruption.
Yes.
And this is what happens to people all over this country, not to mention the fact, the whole idea that they're allowed to investigate themselves is ridiculous. And, you know, we've seen that recently the U.S. Attorney General Holder after the Fast and Furious scandal. I mean, people within the Justice Department were committing crimes and giving weapons to bad guys for whatever their nefarious reasons were. And the same thing happened in that case. They decided they weren't going to investigate themselves. And that's the reason we are in the position we are in today. What you started out with at the beginning of the show is so important. Frankly, I think the entire system has to be crashed. It has to burn. And then we have to start again. And one of the most disgusting and obvious things that they did in the beginning was to make it where only attorneys could be judges, only attorneys could be district attorneys, because basically, by definition, an attorney is somebody who gets paid to do something. They protect the bad guy. I mean, how many people that have committed atrocious crimes that have cash do we see going free? And then how many people that have really done nothing do we see going to jail? These people will, you know, basically do anything for cash. That's their job, to sell their soul for cash. As a matter of fact, one of the best books in my library is Theater Tips and Strategies for Jury Trials by David Ball. And this is actually a book that's put out by the National Institute for Trial Advocacy. And what they do in this book is teach lawyers the same tips that they use for people in theaters. How to hoodwink the jury. That's what they teach them. And so this is the level of people, which I don't even call them humans. They don't have a conscience. But this is the ilk that we're dealing with. And now, as you said, they are occupying all branches of government. I mean, how can all three branches of government, which are supposed to have checks and balances on each other, all be infiltrated and, you know, basically totally consumed by this one group? How does that work? Go ahead.
Law is not an exact science. Therefore, the judges and justices can't agree on its meaning. But there were a lot of key people like Harry Truman, Abraham Lincoln, and those who studied law on their own. And they made excellent lawyers. And they were court officials.
But the problem is that the way the legal system has advanced, which is obviously the wrong word to use, but it's gotten to the point where they've defined it. They've written so many things into the law. For example, the rules of evidence. I saw this in the case of my son. Basically, the judge can actually say that anything he wants cannot be introduced into evidence. So by having that power alone, they control the case. If you can't let the truth into the courtroom, then how can the jury ever make a reasonable decision? Not to mention, juries are going away very quickly. I mean, family courts have no juries, divorce courts have no juries, probate courts in most cases have no juries. Criminal courts, they're always pushing the defendant to make a plea bargain so that they can stick them in jail and, you know, not even have to go through a jury trial. So this is how the situation works at this point. It's been totally corrupted.
It is.
Okay, I'm just getting a message from the board op. We're going to do a break just for a few minutes. So stay tuned, listeners. We'll be back after this little music break. And I'll continue with my very special guest, Thelma Newton-McCoy, author of the book Trapped in the Lawyer's Den with Bloodsuckers. And we're all trapped in the lawyer's den with bloodsuckers because the lawyers are running our government, and that's why we're in such deep doo-doo. Okay, folks, we'll be back. Stay tuned. Okay, hello, listeners. This is Dr. Carly back again, What's Ailing the World, Trapped in the Lawyer's Den with Bloodsuckers, with my special guest, Thelma Newton-McCoy, author of the book by that name. Please do contact her and get a copy of this book. You can write her at 2825 Bancroft Street, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28206, or call her at 704-372-9575. This 86-year-old amazing woman is trying to help others who have been victimized by the courts, and also has meetings in Charlotte, which I hope one day I'll get to attend one, you know, trying to basically warn them what they're up against, and of course not giving legal advice, but just, you know, point them in the right direction as to, you know, what they need to do to extricate themselves, because writing to your officials, writing to your legislators, writing to any attorney with any hat they may have is not going to do a darn thing. And as I was mentioning before the break, as often happens with people who undergo legal abuse syndrome, as a matter of fact, there's actually a book by that name, Overcoming the Devastation of Legal Abuse Syndrome by Karen Huffer, MS, because, of course, there is no pill for injustice. Thelma also started having fainting spells and all kinds of other problems, just having to go through the system, going to person after person, trying to get help, and realize they were all part of the same club. Go ahead, Thelma.
Yes, there seemed to be a secret society of attorneys. And as a secret society of attorneys, they are very protective of each other. So much so that when we submit complaints to the North Carolina State Bar, for example, we are not allowed to have a copy of what the attorney says in regards to our complaint. We receive a standard form letter. Then the attorney has done no wrong, and he has not violated the code. When you know better, this by law degree is a violation of the code. And when we try to get this information, it is not available. So there are a lot of reforms that need to be made that would certainly help us a lot. For example, in my situation, when I wrote the North Carolina State Bar about my complaint, I had a neighbor to also write the North Carolina State Bar. And my neighbor was Thomas Brotus. And Thomas Broadus received only $500 of his settlement. So when he received the $500, he smelled a rat. He knew something was wrong. So he wrote the North Carolina State Bar about it. And instead of Thomas T. Downer responding to the North Carolina State Bar, he, in short, responded to my neighborhood. He wrote the State Bar a letter stating that Thomas Broadus was a neighbor of mine and that I was trying to make him and my lawyer look bad because I had a mental problem and things of that nature. Then he put at the bottom of the letter, CC, Thomas Broadus. So he answered Thomas Broadus' complaint to the State Bar. And by Thomas Broder getting that letter and other people in my neighborhood, that was a major defamation of my character. So I wrote the State Bar about it, and the State Bar found nothing wrong with him doing that.
Because they are monitoring themselves. And let me say, you know, of course, it's not just the legal system. The medical system has become co-conspirators with the land sharks. In fact, you also tried to file a complaint about Dr. Mize, who, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, had committed 5 felonies and, you know, should have had severe sanctions and, you know, being watched by the medical board and things of that nature. And when you submitted a complaint to the Medical Society about Dr. Mize, on page 62 it says, there was a letter submitted, since Dr. Edwin Mize is not a member of the Mecklenburg County Medical Society, it does not fall within our province to bring action of any sort on the recent complaint you received from Thelma McCoy. Now, of course, you know, the medical societies are just little clubs. The medical board is the one that goes after the licenses of bad doctors. But at the very least, they should have told you. Well, actually, I'm looking at the next page. It looks like something was sent to the North Carolina Board of Medical Examiners. Let's see. Due to the fact that there are no statutes, provisions in North Carolina dealing with how a physician may bill his patients or to whom he may send his bills, that the Board of Medical Examiners has no grounds for any further investigation. Now, that is ridiculous. Go ahead.
I went down to Raleigh, to the North Carolina State Bar. Makes up myself the medical board. I went to the medical board down in Raleigh. And when I went down there, they gave the executive director had his secretary to go back in the file and give me a file on Dr. Edwin Sims Myers, Jr., M.D. And in that information, they had in there that they had put him under the care of a psychiatrist for his mental problems. You know, and I didn't know that. And his conscience, no one knew that until I got this information, which I can send you a copy of it. He was put under the care of a psychiatrist for his mental problem. And the psychiatrist was supposed to keep the medical board informed about it.
Were you ever able to find the 5 felonies that he was found guilty of?
Yes, he was, what he was doing, he was a football team doctor, and he was prescribing drugs, the drugs, like, I guess like steroids or whatever, to make the team perform faster and better.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Okay. And then for some reason they found him guilty of having a psychiatric condition. I mean, that's how they went after me. I never had any complaints against me even when I was a surgeon. So because of a public access TV show, they said I had a delusion of conspiracy, because I was talking about, you know, the truth about vaccines and other issues. So Involving psychiatrists is something they do very commonly. But obviously, you know, I still do consults for people. I don't practice medicine. They wanted me to undergo psychiatric treatment, which is a chemical lobotomy. I told them I'm not going to do it. So I'm a teacher now. I teach people how to do, you know, what I would do if I was they. But I always tell people, I have found, you know, been found to have a delusion of conspiracy, and people laugh because anybody that reads my information knows that it cannot be refuted. Vaccines are bioweapons. I have so much evidence of this. It's filling a major storage depot. But still, this is another control issue they use as far as the psychiatrist. And I just want to bring up something about the psychiatrist now, because, of course, that's what they were aiming to do to you, and that's what they tried to do to me. If I'd have been foolish enough to say, yeah, sure, I'll see a psychiatrist, and then I would be put on psychiatric drugs, which would either kill me or give me a chemical lobotomy, and I'd end up saying vaccines are good or whatever. But I just want to bring it up because I'm trying to give an overview of how corrupt the courts are. The psychiatrists are extremely evil. I would put them in the same, you know, bin with the land sharks, the bloodsuckers, because what they will do is that they will, you know, while being paid by the court, they will go in and basically, you know, make any statements they're asked to make about any litigator or any individual that they want to brand with this quote-unquote mental illness brand. As a matter of fact, this is especially used in family court, and another excellent book I have is Horrors of the Court, The Fraud of Psychiatric Testimony and the Rape of American Justice by Margaret A. Hagen, H-A-G-E-N, Ph.D. And basically, you know, this talks about how the psychiatrists are used as well. So there's no question that there is a conspiracy, and the one thing all of these individuals have in common is that they do not have a conscience. So if they want to brand somebody with a psychiatric condition like you or me, if they want to give an excuse to a predator who's committed serial murder or whatever, you know, they can use the psychiatrist to say, oh, he's got a mental illness, so instead of putting him in jail, you know, let's stick him in a psych institution. It'll be a lot easier for him, and he'll have a bigger chance of getting out, whatever. So all of these, you know, institutions or agencies in our world have been totally corrupted, and they all work together to hurt people. And how did you manage to stay away from that psychiatric stigma? How did you manage to avoid all that?
I had the evidence to show. For example, when I was trying to expose what happened to me with the evidence, I went to the Charlotte Observer and the different media with my evidence, and ran into all kinds of problems. But two of the Charlotte Observer reporters, and I think I mentioned them in my book, came to my house and sat at my kitchen table and went through the evidence. Then I went to Ms. Jo Graham Foster's house, the member who was a member of the North Carolina House of Representatives, and she went through it and saw what they were trying to do. And I also, you know, made contact with people with my proof, the documents and everything, but I could not get the legal profession to help me any with any of my documents, nothing.
Well, and also the Charlotte Observer did not publish your story, did they?
Oh, no. No.
Right. Because, see, that's another problem. People think, oh, I'll go to my paper and I'll bring all my evidence and this will be exposed. Yeah, I tried that, too. New York Newsday. I actually had a news reporter by the name of Dowdy. He came to my house. He spent hours there. I showed him many of the documents of what had been done to my son, who was now in the custody of his abuser, and what was done to me because I wouldn't shut up. And he actually had tears rolling down his eyes, but he admitted to me, he said, my editor will never let me publish this information. It's not going to happen.
It's amazing, because some of the things they do. Now, one thing that was done that was really shocking to me, I was of the impression that Equifax, you have Equifax, a credit reporting company? Equifax, somebody connected with this team hired Equifax to do an investigation of me to find out how I was able to get money to go to California to retain that attorney from California, Robert L. Allen. And so the Equifax investigator drove a little blue Volkswagen, and he went to my neighbor on my right side, Mr. Huntley, and asked him. He went to the neighbor on the other side, Hortense Alexander, and asked her, and went across the street to Mrs. Dobbs and asked her. And so people told me that that man in that car was going around asking questions about me as to how I was able to live without income and who was supporting me and so forth. So a lady sent her little son over here up to my house to tell me he was across the street over at Miss Dobbs' house getting information from her. So I went over there and I wanted to know who he was. And he almost made like he didn't know who he was. And so I said, you're going to tell me something. So then he wrote on a piece of paper, Equifax. And I didn't know until that time that Equifax had investigators going around doing stuff like that. So when I exposed that, I was able to ascertain information that Equifax, as an investigative agency, was not licensed to do business in North Carolina. And if you're an investigative agent, you are supposed to be licensed by the state FBI. So I contacted the state FBI, and they sent a person down to interview me and so forth. And they ended up confirming that Equifax was not a license to do what it was doing at that time, investigated me and da-da-da. So they came back later and explained to me that they had gotten Equifax license, but they couldn't do anything else about my situation.
So wait a minute. If anybody, you know, does anything where they're supposed to have a license and they don't have a license, they're prosecuted. So what happened is that they actually ignored the fact that they did something they weren't supposed to do because they didn't have a license, but then helped them get a license so that in the future they could do what they were doing, but there was no negative ramifications for them doing what was illegal to you.
Well, the only help I really got from the FBI that I can say was help was during this period of time when they were so angry with me for trying to expose them. Somebody that knew how to change telephone number, change my number to Sears and Roebuck, and all day long my phone would ring, and when I would ask, it was Sears and Roebuck, Sears and Roebuck, Sears and Roebuck. So I reported that to the FBI, and they sent a man down from the FBI, and I think he came 2 days, and he listened to that. And so they got that corrected. They had that cut out and got my original telephone number back for me.
Wow.
They were playing on for my number, saying that I had requested that my number be changed to that number.
Wow. I mean, it's just mind-boggling.
They did some mean stuff. I just can't describe it, how that affects you.
Well, not to mention the fact, I'll say it again, you're an elderly woman, barely surviving, having gone through a serious car accident where you had lots of injuries, where they actually said you were disabled, and then all the additional things that happened from the legal abuse, and yet they keep torturing you and torturing you. I mean, I actually tried to get Amnesty International involved with my case at a certain point, because this is the definition of torture. But, of course, Amnesty International is another group. It's a fake group. You know, they'll tell us about stuff happening in other countries. Lots of it's made up. But in terms of what's happening here in the United States, to people like us that are tortured for telling the truth. Nobody will touch it. And let me just bring up, so the reason you went to California, as you explain in your book, is because you could not get an attorney in North Carolina or even on this coast to help you with a legal malpractice. Because as you said, once you're dealing with legal malpractice, you know, it's almost impossible to get help. So tell the listeners a little bit more about your California experience, please.
Okay. I worked for the federal government for 3 years at Pope Air Force Base, and I worked with all officers. So when I ran into this problem, I went down to the base and I told some of the officers about what had happened to me. And they suggested a lawyer for me to talk to in Fayetteville, and I did. And he suggested that I go as far away from North Carolina as I could to find an attorney to give me legal help that did not know these attorneys here in Mecklenburg County. So I went to California to the lawyer's referral service, and I was referred to an attorney, Robert L. Allen. And Robert L. Allen agreed to give me legal representation. And he did a lot of research and so forth. And he came to Charlotte and took the deposition of everybody who was a defendant except Tom Ray, the lawyer.
Before you continue, I just want to ask you a very important question. Did he give you a copy of the contract you signed with him?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so he came to North... Okay, that's a green flag. Okay, so he came to North Carolina to do depositions. How did that work?
So when the case was called for trial, the lawyers from California had 6 cases scheduled for trial at the same time as my case was called here by the court. So that meant he had accepted employment over 3,000 miles apart, and the 2 cases came up for trial at the same time. So my lawyer, what he did, he contacted the judge, Judge James B. McMillan, who was a U.S. federal judge and a personal friend of defendant Tom Ray. So Judge McMillan let Allen put in an appearance to make it appear that we were having a trial, but he did not attempt to introduce McCall's actions, evidence, or anything. It was a mockery of a trial for about 2 hours. And let him go back to California for his 6 cases there.
So you know that was... Wait a minute. So you know they had done that in the back room beforehand, right? And if I remember, didn't you talk about in your book where you weren't even aware of when this was going to happen? You got a phone call like...
I didn't know they were going to have the trial that day. He gave me a conference to meet him at the Radisson Hotel for a conference. And when I went down for the conference, he had gone down to meet with the judge and the defendant's lawyer and arranged for the trial to come up that afternoon. So when he came back to his hotel room, I was standing by the door still waiting for the conference, and that's when he told me that we had to go to court.
And you weren't even dressed appropriately as you would have otherwise dressed?
And I'm from a large family. And my sisters and brothers had come from all over the United States to be with me on that day. And my daughter had come and her children. And so we had arranged to have the courtroom packed with supporters that knew about my situation. And so they deliberately had it in such a way that I would not allow time to call my family that had come in town, my daughter, or anybody.
Exactly. It was all done on purpose.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. So then what happened with this
profile? I paid this lawyer over $10,000 up front.
Wow. Okay, so how did that end up?
I didn't get any money back or anything like that. The judge dismissed my case with prejudice.
Wow. And then, of course, you've already paid that attorney, So now what are you going to do? You have another attorney to sue. I mean, you see, and this is the mistake that people make. You know, you think that one attorney is going to go after another attorney and get you justice. In reality, it doesn't matter what coast they're on. If they've got that bar license, and as a matter of fact, I researched this at one point. When you have a bar license, which actually comes out of the UK, and that's another whole show, but there's a list of attorneys as to where their loyalties are supposed to be. And the first loyalty is to the court. And, of course, attorneys are officers of the court. So when you have corrupt officers of the court, the first duty of any attorney is to protect the corrupt officers of the court and the corrupt court. The client actually comes down, I think it's fifth or sixth on the line. And so this is what people don't realize when they're hiring an attorney to, quote-unquote, represent them. This is happening all the time. The backroom deals that are made, as I said, they figure out how much money can we extort from this individual, from all their family. A lot of people will go to church and get, you know, the churches to try to come up with a fund or whatever to help people. Whatever the case may be, they'll use up every dime they have. And then the judge will dismiss the case, or the case will be found, you know, to be just not even worth prosecuting, or whatever the case may be. This is how it always works. I can't even remember any case ever of an attorney being found of guilty of malpractice. It doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Well, it's the federal government here in Charlotte, they tried an attorney who was a law partner of Thomas T. Downer for income tax evasion. I think the case lasted for years, several years. And then the court let him go. So when I tried to get my case looked into, the Judge James B. McMillan, according to Allen, the attorney from California, say that judges don't like cases involving attorneys, especially attorneys from large law firms, because they keep the case going on for years with unnecessary discoveries and unnecessary action until they can wiggle out of it.
Right.
It doesn't cost them anything because they could just use the lawyer friends and law firm buddies and partners and all. Whereas a person who is not a lawyer and have to go out and hire somebody, they wouldn't be able to do that.
Right. So basically, this is where the rules of evidence come in. They use the rules of evidence to actually exclude the very damning evidence that would prove the guilt of these psychopathic land sharks, bloodsuckers. And, you know, as I said, the Masons are very much involved in this. The high-level Masons, they always protect their own. As a matter of fact, 33rd-degree Masons, that's part of their oath, that they must protect a fellow Mason no matter what that Mason has done. And you're obviously dealing with high-level Masons. And so this is how it works. And the very worst that will usually happen is they may get a fine. But the fine will be just a small fraction of, you know, the funds that they have illegally procured by their crimes. And
you know what?
Go ahead.
Whenever that case came up with Senator Edwards, everybody I talked to, they predicted that nothing would be done to him about anything because
right.
he was an attorney.
Uh-huh.
They predicted that, and they were very right.
Exactly. And we can see the morality, or lack thereof, of this man whose wife is dying of cancer, who's on the presidential campaign trail pretending that he's, you know, a man of the people, when in reality he's having an affair with this woman and eventually gets her pregnant and then denies paternity and all the rest of that. And obviously, you don't have to be an accountant or, you know, a legal person to realize that whatever it was, $1 million paid to this woman so she could travel around the country and hide from the National Enquirer reporters. And it's funny how that worked out, because they eventually did get him. But obviously, where did this money come from? These two wealthy people who gave this man money despite his atrocious actions, how can that not be deemed as a campaign donation? Because were he not running for president, they wouldn't have, you know, worried about hiding what he was up to, you know? So that was so obvious. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
But right here in North Carolina, the tobacco lawyers sued the tobacco company. Some lawyers sued the tobacco company and got billions of dollars, billions from suing the tobacco company. No caps on it, but the people who were the victims of the smoking-related illness, they didn't get anything.
Isn't that amazing? And let me just state, just on that subject alone, I have researched this for years. You see, the American Indians did not get lung cancer. I certainly don't promote smoking, but I actually learned in medical school about a virus that they created called tobacco mosaic virus, which they have given to the tobacco plants, which actually causes the tobacco to be able to reshuffle genes and things of that nature. And this is part of the whole genetically modified poisoning of the people. And they're even growing vaccine viruses on tobacco plants now. Not to mention the fact that there's 3,000 chemicals that they have put into tobacco and cigarettes. So it's not the tobacco that's killing people in the first place. It's all the other poisons they put in there. But you see, this is part of the depopulation agenda, and so they construct these things, basically, you know, they hold the tobacco companies hostage, okay, you're gonna have to pay, you know, these gigantic, quote unquote fines, which will go to the attorneys that fight them, as well as the government, but like you said, the people that were injured get nothing. And this is the entire basis of the class action lawsuit situation in this company, in this country. If you have a number of people that were harmed by any product, no matter what it is, they have to get an attorney. You cannot do this pro se, sui juris, whatever. So you have to get an attorney. You have to file a class action lawsuit. And this is what always happens with class action lawsuits. We see this all the time. You know, the attorneys and the government get millions and millions of dollars. The people get a few pennies. That's how it works.
And it seems like that we should have caps on the amount of money they can get.
Of course. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. If they have a class action lawsuit, if they've got, you know, 5,000 plaintiffs, you know, they're doing the same research, they're doing the same work. If they had one client or 5,000, they're doing the same work. So how can they get money, one third to one half of the entire settlement, from that suit based on the fact that they did the same work for 5,000 as they would have done for 1,000? I mean, it just goes to show, how the three branches of government being infected with attorneys has created the situation that we find ourselves in.
Well, it seems like we have a situation also whereby attorneys at law keep their own time, they charge their own fees, and I have not been able to understand how the IRS, Internal Revenue Department, makes the attorneys accountable for the money that they take in. Because by keeping all the paperwork, especially in these personal injury accident cases, they are able to keep two sets of records. And by keeping all the records and not allowing the clients to get their hands on those records, the clients can't prove anything. And unless they provide the proof, the IRS can't prove anything.
Well, the IRS is run by attorneys as well. You see, it's actually a Masonic brotherhood. It infiltrates everything. Attorneys control everything. Anything that's involving a contract, and that's why I said early in the show, the attorneys created contract law because what their job is to put a loophole in there to screw you, and then, you know, you'll find out later, oh, you didn't read the fine print. There was a loophole in here. And then all of a sudden it's your fault because you weren't able to understand the legalese within the contract. You know, in my opinion, you know, when I do a dealing, you know, my word is my bond. I tell the truth. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I will do that thing. As I've proven for 15 years, my goal is to cause the death of medicine. And I will do that until my last breath. And that is my bond. I don't need the contract to do that. And anybody that gets sucked into these contracts, that's what they're going to find, is that the loophole is what's going to bring them down. And in my opinion, you know, there's lots of lawyer jokes. But in my opinion, if there was a plague that we could unleash on the lawyers, the world would be in such a better place. The lawyers are the one predatory, blood-sucking, as you said, a group of psychopaths on this planet who will do anything for cash, who will rob, cheat, and steal, who will protect the serial killers, whatever. And this is the reason that we're in the boat that we find ourselves in. As a matter of fact, in your book, on page 110, you actually mention an article in the Reader's Digest, Why Crooked Lawyers Go Free. And as you state, the article goes on to tell why your chances are slim, why you'd be wasting your time to even enter the legal system. So this was a very interesting admission. And let's see. You said on the next page, I realized what a joke my letters had been. Contacting lawyers to reform lawyers, all of them members of the same conniving priesthood. The lawyers needed reforming the most, the really crooked, dishonest, seamy, and seedy ones were the largest contributors to the officials' elections campaign. And these large contributions by the crooked attorneys bought silence for their wrongdoings once these officials were elected. As a matter of fact, I was amazed, let's see, I have so many bookmarks here in your book. At some point, and I can't put my hand on it right now, but at some point, somebody actually advised you that if you wanted to get justice, you should work for the election campaign of a particular individual, and then they might help you get justice. You can't make this stuff up. Do you remember that particular instance?
Yes. Well, may I make a comment about the article, Why Crooked Lawyers Go Free?
Yes, please.
When I ran into this problem that I wrote, people started sending me articles nationwide trying to prove to me that I was in a situation that I could not find help with because it would expose the criminal wrongdoings of lawyers. So a gentleman came over from Gastonia to bring me his copy of the Reader's Digest with that article in it. And it was such interesting article right to the point that we went out to Eastland Mall to the drugstore out there and bought a copy of the book. And I ordered thousands of copies of that article, and I circulate those articles everywhere I went, and I hired people to help me to put the article out. But before I put the article out, I contacted the police department and asked for the if it would be okay for me to put a flyer out, and they said as long as I put it under the windshield wiper so it wouldn't blow off and cause litter. So that's what I did. So since we had an amendment on a 1980 ballot where we were to vote for or against lawyers only being the justice and judges, I used that article to help me to give my opposition to that amendment. And so I put a copy of the ballot and a copy of that article with my opposition against it on the windshield wipers. And so that was reported to the chief of the police department, Lieutenant Colonel B.C. Abercrombie, who was the chief of the police department. And from his deposition, he was told that I was doing crazy things, putting articles on people's cars. So someone was appointed to go behind me and collect the articles, take them off the cars so that they would not have any impact on the voters' political thought in voting for the amendment. And I filed a complaint about that with the election board, and they said that there was no wrong in that being done.
Wait, they said what? There was no wrong in what? In what you were doing?
What they were saying, that whoever did it, which I know who did it, I told them, that was not a violation of the election board laws. In other words, I was expressing my First Amendment right to write articles and put out articles against the amendment on the 1980 ballot, where we were to vote for only lawyers being the justices and judges. I was opposed to that because I had seen so much corruption. And so I was placed under surveillance, and the article was taken off the calls.
Well, let me just state, not only that, you spent your own personal funds to make many, many copies of these articles, which you were distributing as a public service to alert people as to what's going on. And once again, we know that whoever's collecting these articles off the windshields of the people was most likely being paid for with taxpayers' money, and they don't want the public to realize these things.
Lieutenant Colonel B.C. Abercrombie, chief of police department, he stated in his deposition that he was told that I was doing that, and that was one of the things that the power structure that did not want me doing that told him to try to convince him that I was doing that because that was crazy to do that.
Right. It's crazy to alert your fellow citizens that they are being sucked dry of all their funds and denied justice by this priesthood class of attorneys who sell their soul every day. Yes, that makes you a nut job.
Yes. I spent a lot of money ordering those articles, and I paid people out of my little money that people were helping me with to help me to put the articles out on windshield wipers and pass them out, trying to enlighten the people as to what was going on.
Exactly. Well, you know, I have experienced very similar things to you. That's why I totally resonated with your experience, because, you know, we grow up in this country, we're given this crock of bull that we live in the best country in the world and, you know, the rule of law, blah, blah, blah. It's a total fraud. And it's not until you enter into this land shark den and have them suck you dry, not only of every fund you have, but deny you justice to try to imply that you're a mental case because you're speaking about it. The things they did to you, I've had three attempts in my life. You know, they haven't tried to plant a gun on me or I do get surveilled, but it's not as obvious as in your case. But when you're going through things like this, it's another Twilight Zone experience. It's like, wait a minute. You know, we live in the country ruled by the rule of law. So how can you be illegally surveilled without a warrant? And like you said, had your sister not been with you, who knows how this would have gone? You know, they could have done anything.
I believe I would be in jail today. I did.
Well, not only that, they could have made something up that you tried to harm the person who was frisking you. So
right.
Not only could they have found a gun on you that they planted, but they could have said that you tried to harm the officer, and then it brings another whole level to the case. So it's really amazing how that works out.
Very scary.
Yeah, but another amazing experience you had, because as I mentioned, you're African American, and you know, you believe that if you could find an African American attorney, that he would help you, and that enter attorney Sidney Verbal, who basically had also been married to a sorority sister of yours, and you thought, okay, you know, he's aware of what's going on. I mean, let's face it, you know, African Americans have undergone all kinds of discrimination and crap, you know, Tuskegee genocide. I mean, the list is endless for all these years. So you found this individual, you thought he was going to help you, and especially that he was married to a sorority sister of yours. So what happened when he entered the scene?
He is the one that he told me that I was going about trying to get help the wrong way, that I should seek out Commissioner Tom Ray, the attorney, and ask him to work in his campaign to help him to win. Because Attorney Tom Ray and those say that I knew a lot of people. In fact, they say that I knew every damn body, and that I knew enough people to have a great impact on the election. And for me to go and work in his campaign and help him to get elected, and once Tom Ray was elected, then for me to ask him to help me.
And during this helping, during the election campaign, did he suggest that you bring up the complete corruption and fraud in the legal system as part of why we need this guy to be elected, or was that an afterthought? After he's elected, then maybe he'll help you. What was the advice?
He told me after Tom Ray was elected, he would help me if I helped him.
Right.
And so I was about to help Tom Ray after they did all those things to me.
Right. Well, not only that, but it's complete corruption and fraud to begin with. It's extortion. Basically saying, Thelma, unless you help elect this man, who you know is already working with the other side, but let's pretend he's not, you help him get elected, and then maybe he will help you, which you knew he would not help you, because the old boys club is not going to be destroyed from members of the old boys club. You know, people talk about the thin blue line as far as police covering up corruption of other police. And, of course, here in North Carolina, I mean, if I see a flashing light in my rear-view mirror, I think of these police as predators. As a matter of fact, we had many instances of police stopping women and then raping them. So, basically, you know, that's one thing that is talked about is the thin blue line. But the thin black line of the attorneys and judges, that's never talked about. And the reason all of these atrocities are happening, the murders by medicine, all the horrific things the police are doing. I mean, every week in the paper you read the police have shot somebody else or tasered somebody else, all kinds of atrocities. In fact, I'm never afraid when I'm out in the public, whatever neighborhood I'm in. It's only when I see the police. That's when I think, uh-oh, I may have a problem here. Okay, they are part of the predators working for these monsters. But
I really fear the police now because of my experience with them.
Yes. And you're an 86-year-old grandmother. Let me just tell you, there's a YouTube now that's going viral. A 76-year-old grandmother whose grandson allegedly was growing a few marijuana plants on her property. The police broke down her door. She had had two strokes and a knee replacement. They tackled her, put her to the ground, shot her dog in a non-fatal shoot. So the dog was screaming, running all over the apartment, bleeding, eventually died. This is what they did to this 76-year-old grandmother. That's what
all
these monsters are doing. Huh?
Awful things are happening.
Yeah.
They're doing some awful things.
Yeah. They're psychopaths, and that's why I always talk about we have to eliminate the psychopaths. We know who they are. You can tell who they are by their actions. And, in fact, you have experienced it yourself. I've experienced it yourself. The fact that you have even survived is such a testament to your strength and who you are. And that's why, you know, I wanted to have you on my show to give others the courage to do the right thing. Because you have done the right thing. You have exposed these monsters. The monsters continue to do what they do. You see, it's funny how it all works out, because in the beginning, I'm sure they were laughing at you, saying, oh, we got this, you know, elderly black woman. We're going to discredit her. We're going to plant evidence on her. We're going to drive her crazy. That's what they thought. But guess what? That's not what happened. And that's why I want to give people the courage to do what you have done and what I've done, because if we do nothing, we are going to end up in an even worse hell than we find ourselves in now, because silence is consent. And we're running out of time so fast. I want to bring up two other very important books in my library. The Second Rape, Society's Continued Betrayal of the Victim by Lee Madigan and Nancy Gamble. One of the things I realized from studying all these things over the years is that, say, in criminal court, especially with rape victims, the person that was victimized is the only person not represented by an attorney, and this is what allows the state to dismiss these cases and allow these predators to go free, because it's a jobs promotion, you know, situation. The more criminals you have on the street, the more crimes that will be committed and the more jobs they will have for themselves. And then another very important book, And Justice for Some, An Exposé of the Lawyers and Judges Who Let Dangerous Criminals Go Free, by Wendy Murphy. And basically she talks about how often and deliberately judges and defense lawyers put the criminals right ahead of the victims, because, as I said, that's a jobs promotion strategy for all of these psychopaths. We're running out of time, like I said. In closing, I just want to bring up one of my favorite chapters of your book, Chapter 12, The Bloodsucker's Stronghold on the Courts. And in this, you talk about if you had murdered someone, you could have obtained an attorney, court-appointed. Of course, that attorney was working for the government, but whatever. Because your suit was a civil one, and especially because it was against other attorneys, there wasn't a chance you had been blackballed by the attorneys. And eventually you ended up representing yourself in front of the honorable. I always laugh when judges call themselves honorable. But Honorable Judge James B. McMillan presiding, and that talks about your pro se case. And you already discussed this to some degree, that eventually he ended up dismissing your case, correct?
Yes.
So then where did that leave you? How did this whole thing with the courts end up?
Well, everything was swept under the rug, and I was never allowed to get one word of truth exposed about any of my causes of action or evidence. And so after I was not able to get anything exposed, then I wrote a book about it.
Exactly.
Because I wanted people to know.
So all of these things that have happened to you were swept under the rug, as you said.
I ran into that never-ending Bob Bench buddy-buddy system, lawyer-judge buddy-buddy system.
Right. So in terms of your initial injury from the car accident, go ahead.
Yeah, I finally got that settled, but I didn't get enough out of Holland Matter. I think it was less than $2,000, something like that.
Wow. And did you have to give some of that to the attorney who refused to give you a copy of the contract?
Yes.
Wow. You can't make this stuff up.
I finally got my disability retirement benefits from the state.
Mm-hmm.
After years of fighting.
But look what you had to go through. I mean, most people would not even have survived it. And that's why they do this, because they were hoping that you would die, that you would get extremely high blood pressure, you know, maybe pop an aneurysm or whatever the case may be. This is how they delay things, and they cause people to eventually give up, because not many people would have the courage and the strength to continue on with all that you have gone through.
But they do everything they can to make you give up or try to make you commit suicide. They do that.
So what has the result been in your local community, in your family? What are people doing different now? Are they still hiring these?
Well, we have people have joined in a group where we have an organization called Carolina Advocates for Legal Reform.
Mm-hmm.
Where we are trying to help each other to avoid as many of these mistakes as possible and to try to educate people like you are doing about these things. We have an organization called Carolina Advocates for Legal Reform, and we meet and we try to help each other to become educated about a lot of these traps and things of that nature.
Right, and that's very important. As I said, in my opinion, the ultimate, we have to destroy all of these agencies. Our government is so corrupt from top to bottom at every level. It's got to be smashed. And I don't claim to have all the answers as to how to do that. What I do know is that until the people stand up and say no, they will not participate in this fraud and corruption anymore at all levels, including the medical doctors creating disease and killing people with vaccines and all the big pharma drugs. You know, nothing is going to change until the people do something. Representatives are not going to help them. All the people in government, by definition, have agreed to go along with the program. Because
well,
it's not...
Evil can only prevail as long as good men do nothing.
Exactly. Edmund Burke. Well, I want to thank you so much, Thelma. I can't wait to meet you. I'm hoping to attend one of your get-togethers with your coalition for
legal reform.
Right, coalition for legal reform. As I said, frankly, I don't think it can be reformed. I think it has to be smashed and started over again. But definitely, the whole point of your book is that if you are involved with a lawyer, you are trapped in the den with bloodsuckers, and that's how we have to look at these people without a conscience. No matter if they're, you know, your same gender, your same race, whatever, the bar card always trumps everything. They will sell you out in a heartbeat. So why would you pay for that? Stop paying for it. Just like if your doctor is killing you, stop paying for it. Okay. We have to basically avoid these monsters. That's one of the main things that's going to put them out of business.
All right, and thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Like I said, I can't wait to meet you. Thelma Newton McCoy, 2825 Bancroft Street, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28206. Phone number 704-372-9575. Please order her book, Trapped in the Lawyer's Den with Bloodsuckers, a nonfiction book by Thelma McCoy. Let me just remind you all that the views expressed in this program are not the views of the station, but the views of the host, guests, and callers. And people, it's time for you to stand up, because silence is consent. And this 86-year-old woman, if this is not an inspiration to you, you must be dead. Thank you, listeners. We'll be back next week with J.B. Campbell. Okay, that's it for now. Bye-bye.